Chapter 4. No one travelled through open water, not unless they had to. Isharan and Balers in search of new beasts, shell pickers and soul hunters, the endless caravans bearing sullen Namatai labourers to new lives in the pits and quarries that supplied the Idoneth's relentless expansion with stone and metals. No one, going nowhere. Journeys of days at most, and not without a bubble of the enclave's ether sea, which only the most powerful of knights could procure the means to generate. When Lurien had been a child, Lagithe had gifted him a necklace of gem-encrusted shells that she had personally woven with enchantment to blend water and air. He had lost it. Vanglaya must have taken it from him. But Eodrain, he knew, still carried his. It was an emblem of status amongst a people that placed no value on wealth, and Eodrain had prized his status even if he had never had the slightest inclination to venture beyond the tide gates. The hunting grounds and mines that encircled Briom Dar were the halo that surrounded a glowstone, insignificant against the unimaginable expanse of darkness that enveloped it. Lurien had thought he knew the meaning of the word vastness. There had been clay maps of the gulch in his mother's chambers. The delicately reproduced spires of the five enclaves had been needles in a vast bowl of emerald green, bordered on one side by the amorphous grey slabs of continental Gairan, and on the other by the great unknown, the deeper ocean. Lurien had been bored enough, often enough, to memorise every detail of that map, following the glitter trails that had marked the swiftest currents between the enclaves, the tributaries that fed into the Lathway and Kelegaita, the great vortices onto the Whirlway. Lurien had thought he understood its scale. He had heard of the Ur-Kraken that had laid siege to Gwethen 10 years before he was born, larger than the father of all Leviadon and as ancient as the ocean's floor. According to the Isharan, it had been coming out of that deep nothing since the creation of the realms, and had only then finally made it as far as the gulch. He had seen the lights that winked sometimes in the dark, luring hunters and adventurers from the enclaves, never to return. He had heard the same tales as everyone of dead gods and wandering demons, impish species of ocean dwellers such as the Valet, said to possess the lower body of a squid and the bearded upper frame of a duodin, hoarders of Ithilmehair with a love of deadly word games. Vagos, of all people, had even once told him of the reef forests to the far west of Turach, the great alopexes that hunted the squig rays and green lanterns that were singularly vicious creatures, maddened by fungal parasites, inherently unbreakable but highly valued for their sport. The spores, he had said, were from the fabled Orac prophet Morgog, who had supposedly fallen into the Lathway after being driven from his sacred lands in Gur by the taint of Nurgle. Had the tale come from anyone else, Lurien would have dismissed it, as he had Kalohair's outlandish tales of the surface races. But Vagos did not open his mouth often enough to waste breath on lies. The closest enclave to Briom Dar was Elgaen. 4 weeks of hard travel through monster-infested waters and the cyclonic tides of magic storms. Lurien did not know how long it would take to reach Turak that way, as Namariel had originally intended. He did not think it had ever been attempted. Even with a tidecaster to bless the journey and cast a traveller down the truest currents, a voyage to the gulch's outermost enclave was one of several weeks. It would take years. Tens of years. Perhaps only the Ur-Kraken of Gwethen truly understood the ocean's immensity. Lurien was beginning to. The Fangmora, which Lurien had named Venom, though a larger breed of beast than those the Archelian of Briom Dar regularly rode in battle, was little deterrent out here. Here roved monsters of brass, armoured like keeps, beasts with glacial minds, without sense of pain or awareness of self. things which had prowled these seas since before the realm spheres had formed out of the etheric cloud. Namariel's bow was useless against such behemoths, as was Uriel's strength, and no one had even cared to inquire after Lurien's sword. Their only advantage was their lack of numbers. They stuck to the ocean floor, the zigzagging topography adding days to their journey, but providing an abundance of nooks for a small group to move unseen. Every few days, the ever-threatened storms would break, magical vortices tearing great chunks out of the ocean floor, the water rippling with emerald lightning. There was to be no travelling on such days, and so the group instead sought shelter in the many burrow holes and caves of the bottom. Many were ancient, but none were completely unoccupied, and Lurien was forced to dirty his hellsaber on Trogoth crabs, polypsest, and in one terrifying encounter a Lurkinath adolescent, already as massive as the infamous Blacknark breed of Alapex. Uriel proved worth his weight in elf souls in those encounters. It was more than just brawn. The big Namatai seemed to have an innate understanding. He knew exactly where to cut. In such dubious comfort and relative safety, with meat at least in plentiful supply, there could be some respite.
"Again," said Namariel.
The Namatai sat against the back wall of the cave, with her knees up by her chin, wrapped in her frayed cloak. Blasts of etheric lightning strobed her eyeless face with random flashes of false colour. In the darker spaces behind her, Uriel butchered the carcass of the Hugath that had not given willingly of its lair. Lurien let out a slow breath and brought his hellsaber back into a guard. Morogai hung a sword's length from him, a cruel-looking short sword and a serrated knife with which he had become intimately acquainted over the preceding weeks, in her small hands. He struggled to keep himself from swaying. "This is hardly a fair fight."
"She knows that," said Namariel.
Morogai grinned. Her gums were green.
"I'd like to see how well she fights after a cupful of Enervas."
Enervas was a flowering algae that was common everywhere in the Green Gulch, and one of the few that the Idoneth actively cultivated. In its wild-growing form it was a potent soporific, but in the hands of a skilled Isharan herb-singer it was prized more highly even than Corlep for its nerve-deadening effects. A single leaf was more powerful than a full cellar of Duadin ale, and for those few surface dwellers erudite enough to have gleaned hints of the Ideneth's existence, there was no artifact or jewel more actively sought.
"Does Morogai complain that she is half your size, or that she is blind? This is the handicap that the gods have chosen to throw at you, my prince. I think you would agree it is preferable to leaving your senses open for Felglaive's soul-scryers to find."
"I suppose."
"It is just dead leaves and stems now, in any case. We should have been halfway to Turak by now, and I was not expecting to need to split the supply two ways."
Namariel glared at Eodrin. The Archelian was clad in the same exotic finery as he had been at Tor Anath, although it was noticeably greened and frayed around the cuffs. Morogai's seamstressing was as potent as her swordsmanship, and even if Lurien were to run his hands over his friend's tunic, he doubted he would have been able to say where the razor-shell harpoon had passed through it. The damage to the elf underneath had been rather more serious, but as Lagithe had often told him when he had scraped a knee or taken a knock from a practice sword and sought the attentions of the Truhaers, salt water is the best medicine. After giving the wound a tide to flush itself clean, Morogai had just sewn him up too. He looked hale enough to escape now, if he wanted to. But Eodrain had never needed 1,000 leagues of hostile ocean to excuse his indolence. He'd not even sought to deny Namariel's daily tisanes, which would have been a singularly effortless way of getting the soul scryer's attention.
"Why do you always do as she tells you?"
he said. "Enough, Eodrain.
Namartai witch that she is. Enough! Eodren yawned, chewing on the anavas stems he had picked out of his tea. Lurien had been wise enough to return his dregs for Namariel to eke another pot out of them come the next tide.
"That is my promise you are talking about," he said.
"About that."
"Are you going to hang there like a limp collip berry from the vine?" said Namariel. "Or are you actually going to fight?"
"Oh, I'm going to fight," Lurien snarled and lunged for Moragai's belly. Like an octopus striking from ambush, the tiny Namartai burst into motion, all blurring limbs, as she caught his hellsaber between the quillons and blade of her short sword and pressed the serrations of her knife's curved edge to his throat. Lurien swallowed and held up his free hand in surrender. Eodren chuckled.
"You are welcome to take a turn," said Lurien.
"I'm not the one challenging Vanglaer Felglaive for his crown."
"You could help, though."
"What is it worth to me?"
Not for the first time, Lurien wondered why he had not let Namariel shoot him. Eodren was a feckless dilettante, which, coming from Lurien, was quite the accusation. His ether sea generating amulet was useful, but nothing he could not have cut from the Archelian's neck the second they had been free of Tor Anath. Petulance, he decided. Namariel had wanted to do it, and he had wanted to take the decision away from her.
"Again," said Namariel.
With grinding reluctance, Moragai withdrew her knife from Lurien's throat. Lurien studied the doll-like Namartai as he reset his stance, bobbing up and down in the water. She had to have some weakness. He feinted left with his sword, then went right, rising diagonally to flurry the Namartai with high blows. She rode them as effortlessly as a shaft of light, playing over the furiously moving blade, before arriving with a knife against his loin and a short sword across his belly. Eodren laughed hard enough to allay any concerns anyone may have had as to the stitching in his gut.
"Again,"
Namariel sighed. And again, like some porcelain golem created by the soul mages of Briomdar's Ishratizar houses, Moragai withdrew her blades.
"How is this any different to training under Vanglaer?"
Lurien turned to Eodren for support, who nodded, remembering.
"We never did much to actually teach us either," he said.
"No, he just beat us in the hope we would eventually improve." "Again," said Namariel. "I refuse to make sport of myself for this Namartai spite creature."
Namariel frowned past him towards Moragai and nodded. The Namartai exploded forwards. Lurien kicked back in panic, digging up every trick and ounce of grace he possessed to keep her blurring blades at bay. 4 times over the course of a second, his sword hit metal, only to finish with a slash across empty water, and Moragai's knife working into the small of his back.
"Spear of Mathlan!"
Lurien swore, throwing his hellsaber down in anger. Eodren gave a sardonic clap. The Enovas was starting to kick in.
"Again,"
said Namariel.
"Maybe she can fight Vanglaer,"
Lurien suggested.
"And what would the noble houses you were so fond of make of that, do you think?"
"What I told them if they didn't want to be the next in line to face her."
"I wouldn't want to," said Eodren.
Lurien and Namariel both sneered.
"Let him put something in his belly first, at least,"
Ureil suggested, looking up from his butchery. He'd been carving the dead Hugarth into strips, laying them over firestones to sizzle, surrounding himself in oily micelles and bubbles of warm air.
"It might take the edge off the end of us. Give him a chance, at least."
Lurien held his hand out toward the big Namartai.
"Yes, thank you."
"A small chance,"
Ureil conceded.
"This is still a game to you, my prince," said Namariel, "even after everything you have been through. I don't think you understand what is at stake. You want to be king because you think you deserve it." Wearing the crown means you win and Vanglia loses. You do not yet seem to have grasped that you might lose, or what losing really means. A return to slavery for us. Execution and banishment from the Corellium for you. I doubt there will be torture. Your soul will be devoured by the Prince of Pain, and he will make eternal mockery of any form of pain that the students of the Druhir could devise. Anir and the others will understand this even if you do not. They will give you nothing because you think you are entitled. You're going to have to convince them. They will probably want something from you in exchange, and it will not be easy or cheap. They need to believe that you at least have a chance of defeating Vanglia Felglaive in honourable combat.
The tyrant almost killed me once.
Namariel nodded towards Moragai. The seamstress grinned.
You don't eat until I see her bleed. But I've never even again.
Lurien bent to pick up the hellsaber and surged forwards with a yell, rancor stippling his sword arm with chilblains. He hacked at Moragai. The girl bent under his blade, countered with her short sword. His sword met it, knocked it aside. He twirled, blocking a trio of short thrusts to the midriff. Pushing up off his toes, he launched himself over the smaller elf's head. She dropped into a split and slid under him as he somersaulted over, their blades clashing in the middle. What would he have done had he actually managed to break through her guard? He did not know, but he was determined to find out. A kick of the feet righted him, propelled him round. He would have given anything for some proper finned fighting boots, but a deft splay of his bare toes served almost as well. His blade licked out, scraping between Moragai's two. The girl skipped out of reach. Instinct screamed at him to go after her, but he reeled it back, using his weapon's greater reach instead to stab back and drive her onto her heels. He drew his sword back and settled into a new guard. Gasping for breath, he grinned. Moragai looked at him in puzzlement, then threw her knife at him. It spun end over end before smacking him between the eyes, pommel first. He came to a moment later, lying flat. Uriel and Namariel peered worriedly down at him.
She could have put a knife between his eyes, said Namariel.
She didn't, said Uriel.
She could have.
But she didn't.
Namariel turned to glare at the porcelain child creature.
She can contemplate how upset having to take Eodren's promise instead would have made me while the rest of us eat.
After that, Namariel seemed to take pity on Lurien. They said nothing as Uriel eased him up against the cave wall and set a shell plate in his lap, layering it with strips of hugarth. The four elves chewed in silence, retreating into the bitter company of their own thoughts. The clack-snip of Moragai's needles served as an appropriate accompaniment. The Namatai's fingers worked deftly over the fabric in her hands, empty eye sockets staring at the ground as they did. The work seemed to settle her. Just for the moment, Lurien could almost see a seamstress, rather than the girl that had savaged a Turak Asglir and fought like a demon squid with blades. The bolts of white, silver and blue that Namariel had purchased prior to their flight from Briomdar were almost coming to resemble the tunic and hose of a Turak noble. It would not have quite the same effect in Laramae's court as it might have had in Anir's, but it was better than presenting himself in sackcloth. Lurien smiled ruefully at the thought. It would be good to be amongst kin and in a noble's clothes again. Perhaps with the resources of Laramae's court he could even be rid of Namariel and her promise, too. The gods had, after all, been known to change their minds before.
"Where did a dressmaker learn to fight better than an Arkelian knight?" he said. "Uriel has known her longest," said Namariel.
The big Namatai shrugged.
"I don't know."
"Namatai often develop strange talents as they age," said Namariel.
"Such as?"
"All kinds,"
said Uriel.
"And tastes as well, for surface foods or music we cannot make."
He nodded towards Moragai in her corner.
The rumour in the palace was that her soul belonged to a great hero of men.
Why does she not speak?
Said Éowdraine.
She speaks,
said Uriel.
When she wants to.
And would she kill Vanglaer for me? You think she could?
Namariel asked. Lurien glared at the small Namatai through narrowed eyes. He tried to imagine it, watching Morrigai and the Felglaive at crossed swords in the court of the blind king. The Namatai girl was swift as lightning, bestially vicious, but the tyrant of Briomdar was rightfully the most feared warrior in the gulch. He had never been bested, either in battle or in Dekomrak. Even Galry here looked up to him. Lurien frowned, wondering where this insight had been when he had thought to challenge the tyrant at the Assembral.
Usurpation, it seemed, was nothing if not a tonic for one's perspective.
From behind, perhaps, he said, or while he sleeps. For all her skill, there are things she will never be able to do, said Namariel. Command a bound beast, master a soul-bond blade. If Vanglaer has to be fought, and you can always hope that he does not, it will have to be you that fights him.
Lurien thought on that as Morrigai's needles snipped and clacked from the other side of the cave. He pushed his empty plate away for Uriel to dispose of, suddenly lacking in appetite, and sat back with his arms crossed behind his head. The big Namatai, again, glanced first at Namariel. She gave a nod, and Uriel grudgingly collected the prince's plates.
"We will be in Elgain soon," said Namariel. "If not the next tide, then the one after. Have you given any thought to what you will say when we arrive?"
Lurien smiled.
"Yes, I believe I have,"